Good morning, one and all. I'm John Arola. This is the Damage Report coming at you with the assistance of Anna Kasparian, living legend. Anna, how's it going? Hey.
Going great. Really happy to be here.
Going great. Great to have you here. I don't know if it's the home setup, but you look especially blonde today.
Like your hair looks lighter than normal. Yeah, I don't know what's going on. I mean, I did wash it and blow dry it this morning for you, John. I was like, you know, I'm not gonna bring the bun game. I'm gonna let my hair down and have a good time.
I don't mind the bun. But yes, no. I was worried that you might be like doing like an audition for Fox News or something.
No.
Anyway, I'm kidding.
How dare you?
Well, you're blonde. You're blonde.
Deeply offended by that.
I'm kidding. You would be outnumbered. Anyway, very glad to have you here. We have a lot of news to jump into, including our continuing coverage of the first week of Nikki Haley's presidential ambitions. I think she's probably starting to regret this whole thing because people are coming at her both fast and furious. And some of the furious is racist AF. We predicted it yesterday. I think everybody's ready for it. It's getting dirty really fast and a little bit mildly misogynistic too, shockingly in America. Anyway, we're gonna have that for you. We're gonna have a little bit of Ron DeSantis getting a taste of his own medicine, which is definitely fun. Some hypocrisy on the right when it comes to whether, you know, like young kids should have nutrition and a bunch of other fun stuff besides. Stick around for the aftermath, by the way, because we're gonna be jumping into CEO's digital detox as thousands of people lose their jobs and AI freaking out New York Times reporters. So that's gonna be fun. Anna and I have been doing a little bit of ongoing coverage of these AI developments. And this is a fun, I think, next step forward in those social dynamics. So all of that is coming up soon. For those of you on our live platforms, please hit the like button and share the stream so people know we're live and they can join in all the fun. And if you want to send us any comments, tweets, super chats, all that, Anna and I will respond as we go. But with all that said, Anna, would you like to start the show?
Hell yeah, let's do it.
Okay, let's do it. Let's jump right into this.
You know, if you had to delineate where, say, you and President Trump differ on issues, where would you start?
Well, first, let's say in reference to Whoopi, you know, the thought of me getting into the race makes the liberals' heads explode.
I don't know if I identify as a liberal, but she definitely is thinking of people like me when she says that. And let me just reassure you, Nikki, my head is fully contiguous still. I'm perfectly fine with you running for president. I don't think a lot of people are really all that worried about it. But you'll notice there that in addition to that ridiculous like attempt at red meat for the right wing base, she didn't answer the question, which was pretty simple. What is different between you and Trump, the person who you are challenging for this nomination? I noticed that she didn't answer the question. Sean Hannity noticed that she didn't answer the question. And because he's not scared of Nikki Haley, he felt freed up to ask a follow-up, the rare follow-up on his show. So here is his second attempt to get her to define at least one difference between her and Trump.
Where do you see, if you see, policy differences beyond what you mentioned, which are generational differences, what specific policy areas would you say part with Donald Trump?
What I am saying is I don't kick sideways. I'm kicking forward. Joe Biden is the president. He's the one I'm running against. I'm not going to kick sideways. I don't have time for that. That's not my focus. I'm kicking forward. It's all about Joe Biden.
Okay, Anna, what did you make of that?
Oh, man, I have a lot to say. First, in regard to her made up narrative about liberal heads exploding. Look, that should be very instructive for the left in general. I'm not just talking about liberals. I'm talking about anyone who's even remotely on the left who does not want nefarious figures to win these races. What tends to be red meat for their supporters, or for some who might be persuaded to support them, is the idea that the libs are trying to censor people. Mm-hmm. The libs are so, you know, owning the libs is their whole brand and it's a selling point for some voters. So the reason why I bring that up is don't let them get under your skin so much, right? Mock them, debunk their ridiculous policy proposals, make sure that the American public is as informed as possible about how disastrous those policies would be for the American people. But don't let them ever see you, I'm so delicate about this, I'm so sensitive about it. Don't do that to them, because they win on that branding. Okay, so that's point number one. Point number two, in my opinion, is she's done. She's absolutely done. Like, look at her face as Sean Hannity is quite frankly asking her a question that he should ask of every candidate for any seat. But of course he doesn't. He decides to challenge her because he's essentially communicating to her, listen, you need to know your role. There are no differences between you and Trump, so don't challenge him in the primaries, okay? How about you sit down, little woman? That's what he's saying to her.
Well, and look, she's gonna get stuff like that. She could be strong and prove him wrong.
True.
She doesn't do that. That's surrender right there. Like, if you can't, that's the easiest possible question. What's different between you and this other candidate? I'm not gonna get into that game. I don't kick sideways, I kick forward. You better start kicking in a lot of directions, because there's a lot of people gonna run against you, and they're all way more vicious than you. Also, I'm running against Joe Biden. First of all, you literally are not. You are not running against Joe Biden yet. You might eventually, I'm speaking hypothetically, you're not gonna be the nominee. Right now, you're running against the Republicans, and your refusal to answer questions is not going to endear you to the base. When she says especially, I don't have time for that. The first race is in like 10 months. What do you mean you don't have time for that? You have time for a lot of stuff. This is a long haul. This is a marathon. You can insult all sorts of different people in that time. So no, this is a worse version of what Ron DeSantis is doing, that like supposed high road. But in this case, it's so defensive. Before she even decided to run, she apparently called up Trump to ask him what he thought about it. And now she multiple times refuses to say what the differences are between her and Donald Trump. And by the way, maybe you're thinking, you guys are exaggerating, it's one interview with Sean Hannity or whatever. No, it's very much not. She was on with NBC's Craig Melvin, and she said there that she would not focus on talking about Trump. I don't kick sideways, I kick forward. Joe Biden has not led. First of all, you're not leading, you're hiding. Anchor Erica Hill said, get used to that. I have heard, I don't kick sideways, I kick forward, four times in the last 18 hours. She will not answer substantive questions about why anyone should support her over Trump. And when he has like 12 times the support in polls, you cannot just hide in the shadows. How are you possibly gonna win like that?
I mean, in order to run against Biden, you gotta find some time to run against the other Republicans during the Republican primaries. I mean, she knows this, but this is, the word weak is so perfect in describing her whole demeanor and her strategy. First of all, I would love to have been in the focus group that did the A/B testing on things like, I don't kick sideways, I kick forward. Because obviously that was tested, and somehow there was a focus group in this country that was like, no, it sounds pretty good, pretty good. I'm into it. Not good, not good, because Trump is gonna punch you. And if you don't find a way to effectively punch back, you're done. And based on how she conducted herself in that interview, she's done. She just is. So if you're not gonna fight, if you're not actually going to run, then why are you wasting all of our time? Look, on the main show, on the Young Turks main show, we didn't even cover her announcement that she's running. Because, I mean, why waste precious real estate on that story when there's so much else going on in the world? She's not gonna be the Republican nominee. Once I see any indication that she's actually serious about it, maybe we'll give her a little bit of coverage. But
look, I feel like, you know, I want to give a chance. She's a former governor, she's a prominent politician, she has been called a reasonable older school Republican, which is different than these crazies, but I don't know, a few days in, it's not looking great. That said, I want to be fair, okay? Sometimes. And so I saw a headline that was like, she took a shot at Trump. And I thought, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe she's taking shots at him. Okay, let's jump to this next video and you'll see the shot.
We'll have term limits for Congress. and mandatory mental competency tests for politicians over 75 years old.
So everybody is saying that that is a shot at Trump. Did you catch the shot? Maybe some of you did. It's like looking at one of those magic eye puzzles back in the late 90s. So blah, blah, term limits. They're not actually going to do that. And then mental competency tests. Well, but no, wait. If you actually put her on the spot, she'd say, I'm talking about Joe Biden. That's
or
all about
Feinstein.
Him, you know. Or Feinstein. It's a sleepy Joe, you know, I'm criticizing. Yeah, but he's 80. Why'd you put the threshold 75? Is it because Trump is 76? So it's a way of, this is the biggest attack against her that everyone seems to have identified, against him from her, that everyone has identified. And you kind of have to meet her halfway on it as an attack. It might be criticizing Trump, but she won't specifically say anything. If you pressed her with a follow-up question, she would say that he's totally sane and all that nonsense. So this is not it. This is not gonna get you past Trump. Were you guys in a coma in 2016? He would be on a stage with 15 people and every one of them was like, I'm gonna take the high road. He's kicking me in the nuts. So I don't know how she thinks this is gonna win it for her, but anyway, Anna, that's what we've got.
I will say one thing, and it's the tiny, tiny silver lining that came along with the Trump era. Because prior to the Trump era, you gotta remember, the Republican Party had been incredibly successful in branding themselves as the strong ones. We're gonna protect the country, national security, right? They always presented themselves as these tough guys and tough women. Well, then you have this incredibly pathetic man come along and just cut them down and reveal to the American public just how pathetic and weak they really are. And I have enjoyed that, I will say.
I've enjoyed that too. Anyway, yeah, this is pathetic. You know, I forget who posted on Twitter, but somebody posted this. I thought it was a great point. And they said, this is the series of two questions that should be the beginning of the first Republican debate. When Trump is on stage and DeSantis and Nikki Haley and all of them, Pompeo, whatever. First question should be, who won the 2020 election? Because almost all of them are gonna have to say that Trump won. Because they know that even more popular than Trump is the idea that the election was stolen. They can't deny that the election was stolen because then the base will reject them. So the follow-up question should then be, so then why are you running against Donald Trump? The election was stolen from him, shouldn't he have a chance to? Like, it's so stupid, the whole thing, it's so inconsistent. I've been trying to understand what the point of all this is. So I'm gonna lay out my theory really briefly. Consider this a prediction, maybe. Other than just she's doing this to launch a podcast in 6 months or to sell a book or cameos, I don't know. That's always possible. People run for the presidency for that. Here's the other way. She is going to get 2 to 5% of the vote in these things. That's basically it. For her to win the nomination, that's nothing. For DeSantis to win the nomination, that could be pretty significant. He could use those 2 to 5 points. So if she talked to Trump on the phone about her running for president, maybe it was, I'm gonna run and I'm not gonna criticize you. I'm gonna imply that criticizing you would be bad, in fact. But what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna present a respectable alternative that'll soak up a little bit of the vote and split that vote that could be going to Mike Pompeo, you know, Pence or DeSantis. And then after she helps to take out DeSantis, then she gets to be VP. That's a plausible reason to do this. More plausible is that that is the deal that they struck, but in the end he chooses Carrie Lake over anyway, which would be hilarious. But anyway, this is pure speculation, Anna, but what do you think?
I think John B. hypothesizing. That's what I think. I like that. I like that hypothesis.
Speculation.
Right? Because I mean, to me, look, I can't put myself in her shoes. All I could think about is what I would do in her position as someone who would genuinely want to run for president. Mm-hmm. I would go in and I'd punch him in the mouth, politically, of course, right?
Yeah.
The fact that she's not doing that, to me, signals that she's not serious about running for president. And you know what? Maybe she's not serious about running for president. So I do like your hypothesis. I'm curious to see how it all plays out.
Yeah.
But I will say this, the idea that there was a small period in time during the news cycle where there were rumors about Marjorie Greene potentially running as Trump's VP. And I just, it's still possible. Let's try to prevent that in any way we can, right? So if Nikki Haley's conspiring with Trump, cool. Look, I'd rather
I'll
have
still
that.
I'll pick her over Carrie Lake and Marjorie Greene, I guess.
Yeah.
She's still terrible, but
of course.
Anyway, we're gonna get in a couple of minutes to some of the early insane deranged attacks against Nikki Haley. But I want a bit of a palate cleanser. And so there's someone who used to be in the news all the time. We talk about them frequently. They haven't really been around much, but they popped up to talk a little bit about this developing presidential race in a way that I just can't wait to see how much this angers Donald Trump. Take a look at this.
She was the hottest name in Republican politics in 2011 to like 2015, I would say. This is the case, what you're watching right now, polling at 3% for Governor Ron DeSantis to get in now. People say, will he get in? Will he wait? How can you wait when you are currently the hottest governor in Republican politics, seeing how hard it is to regenerate that attention almost a decade later?
Look, to be fair, I think that Kayleigh McEnany's read there is right. I've said something very similar. I think that it's a totally fair read of the situation. But it would be very easy for anyone, including Donald Trump, to interpret that as her wanting him to jump into the race and along the way declaring that he's the hottest governor. I think that Donald Trump, who she used to be the main point person for, that is gonna get in his fifis real bad, Anna.
Of course, everything gets in his fifis real bad. I mean, he feels slighted or offended by things that aren't even remotely offensive. So I'm really looking forward to the Truth Social post later today.
Yeah, probably.
They're gonna be great.
By the way, can I ask you a question? Because look, she cited there that Nikki Haley was the, I don't think she said hottest politician. I do think she said hottest governor from 2011 to 2015 or so. And you know, at that point I was focused on TYT University and stuff like that. I wasn't as doing as much of the politics. She wasn't a DeSantis at that point. I mean, look, the culture war was a little bit less, I guess, deranged then. I know that she was popular, but I feel like people are exaggerating how popular she used to be.
Absolutely. I mean, I remember covering stories about her at the time, but not to the same extent that we cover Ron DeSantis today. Ron DeSantis is definitely the GOP darling of the moment, even though Trump clearly still has a hold on the Republican base and the voters. But no, Nikki Haley, I mean, it was the same as Kristi Noem, right? Also a deeply conservative governor, right? She would do questionable things in her state, we would cover the story. But again, it wasn't as voluminous. Our coverage wasn't as voluminous as it is with Ron DeSantis.
Yeah. But by the way, I'm glad that you mentioned her because she could still potentially run. Like she could run on, you know, willingly piling up the corpses of her constituents during COVID and not giving a damn about it. She doesn't have some of the establishment respectability of a Nikki Haley, but she does have absolute dead eyes. You look in her eyes, you peer into the abyss. And I think that that's appealing to these deranged people.
I think it's because she's lifting weights too much. I mean, have you seen those guns? That girl's got guns.
Is she a big like weightlifter or whatever?
I have no idea. But if you're not lifting weights, there's no way you can have arms that toned. I know that this is a stupid point, but I had to say it. Sorry.
I think this is the most I do lift weights and I don't have arms that toned. So credit to you, Kristi Noem. Apparently she was lifting up and delivering the bodies that she willingly consigned to an early death during the pandemic. So
yeah.
Hats off to you. Anyway, it is time to have a little bit of a preview of how disgusting and racist the Nikki Haley campaign is going to become. We're gonna start at the fringes, but eventually it is going to be core to this entire thing. So let's venture out to the fringes and remind you of someone who, again, another person who used to be big in the news, thankfully is generally not. Take a look at this.
Her candidacy did remind me that I need to immigrate to India so I can demand they start taking down parts of their history.
Well, you are a good
What's with the worshiping of the cows? They're all starving over there. They're worshiping cows. Do you know they have a rat temple? Where they worship rats? Hey, baby cake, why don't you go back to your own country and reconsider that history? I am descended from Union soldiers. It's my history. This is my country, lady. I'm not an American Indian, and I don't like them taking down all the monuments.
So that's John, what's left of Ann Coulter. Anna, what do you think?
I'm sorry to jump in like this, but I mean, I remember a time when conservatives worshipped Ann Coulter. So why is she so concerned about people worshipping rats? I don't get it.
It's a good point. I think we should look into that. Yeah, I don't love having her back on the show. I love, by the way, that she has become such a fringe figure, replaced by new generations of truly horrible people. But it's a reminder of what is, at least already in some circles, considered perfectly acceptable things to say about Nikki Haley, former governor, and I don't think I need to point this out, person who was born in America and is thus as American as Ann Coulter, that she should go back to her country and deal with the long litany of cultural aspects of India that Ann Coulter has many, many thoughts about. That entire thing is just disgusting. That was one tiny section taken out of a longer rant that's gross from top to bottom. But we point this out because right now it's Ann Coulter saying it. It's going to be Donald Trump saying it soon. And once he does, millions of red hat wearers are going to be echoing all the worst things he comes up with.
Can I also just say to Nikki Haley, who is clearly watching this right now, she actually
She watches. She's a fan of the show.
Every day.
Tier two member.
Day. She's gone to some pretty extreme lengths to dispose of any indication of her Indian heritage. And I'm sure she's doing that to appease conservatives, to appeal to them. And what I'd like to say is, obviously don't do that, because no matter what you do, they're gonna hate you, they're gonna bring it up, and they're gonna use it against you. And I do find it incredibly disgusting and despicable. You don't allow hateful people to take control of the narrative or to bully you into shedding what your identity is and what your heritage is. Okay, so I hate the fact that she pandered to them. I hate the fact that it has backfired, clearly, because it didn't work. And so I think it's a cautionary tale for anyone who thinks that you could ever appease hateful people by doing away with parts of who you are.
Yeah, I don't know. It's obviously very tough. It's not my place, but you are right that it clearly has not appeased them. You get put in incredibly difficult positions in politics, especially if you are trying to appeal to Republicans. I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy, the choices that you have to make. But the end result is absolutely gross. I'll remind you, by the way, that Donald Trump, how did he become like a prominent figure in American politics in the last like 15 years? It was by claiming that Obama was a Kenyan-born Muslim. And that was years of totally accepted stuff on the right. And so
let me jump in on that, because that's another perfect example. Remember, they kept saying that he's Kenyan, and Obama caved to Donald Trump and released his birth certificate. Why would you follow what their orders are?
Which didn't change anything. That's true.
It didn't change anything. Ignore them and crush them. Okay, be strong. I think that's the point that I'm trying to make here.
I understand. Yeah. Well, and her strategy is to not crush him, and it's gonna get disgusting. By the way, we're not gonna focus on this. I just want to bring this up because it's gonna be racist, but also it's definitely gonna be misogynistic. Here's the opening salvo in this. Marjorie Greene, by the way, most of this tweet, if we could bring up this last graphic, is disagreements on policy. They might be exaggerated or whatever, saying that she's weak on the border, doesn't want a wall. I believe she'd be perfectly happy to have a wall. But at least most of what Marjorie Greene is criticizing her for in this tweet, if we could bring this up, we don't have this. Okay, is about immigration or whatever, fine. But then she ends with, if we wanted a Bush in heels, Republicans would vote for Liz Cheney. Like, is Nikki Haley a Bush in heels? First of all, why the heels thing? Like, you're a woman and you don't want to be criticized for the clothing that you wear, like rightfully so. It's gonna be so terrible on there. Look, there are parts of this race, Anna, that obviously I'm into elections, maybe much more so even than you, like the day to day of it. But it is gonna be gross. Anyway,
it is.
Final thoughts? Yeah.
Marjorie Greene might be the dumbest person in Congress, so I don't really care about what she thinks about anyone, including other conservatives.
That's wise. Okay, we're gonna take a break. When we come back, we're gonna give you a little bit of update on the state of book bans in Florida, as well as some of the updates following the train derailment in East Palestine. We'll have that for you after this. Okay, everybody, welcome back to the show. If you're just joining us now, please hit the like button. I want to let you know that coming up after our program, I am reading that on Indisputable, you will not only have Dr. Rashad Ritchie, which would be awesome, but Jeff Wiggins as well. So stay tuned for that, as well as the full slate of awesome TYT content, including Anna Kasparian on The Young Turks. So stay tuned for that. With that said, why don't we jump into our next topic? Ron DeSantis is on the defensive following the almost inevitable next step in his book banning campaign, which is that books have been banned that even right wingers can't defend the banning of, particularly a biography of baseball star Roberto Clemente. So Clemente's book apparently was flagged for being taken off because it references racism that he dealt with as a black Puerto Rican baseball player. It's been removed from the district's libraries for months pending review in compliance with the state's newly passed Stop Woke Act. So because he mentions racism, he did a CRT, obviously, and so the book must burn. That's the policy, except that DeSantis doesn't like it because it's absurd that you would have to take this book down. Let's stop for a brief second to point out that it's equally absurd to strip the libraries and curriculum of any number of different African-American scholars, queer scholars, all of that. But this is one that they can't defend. And so he's lashing out, saying that this is an outlandish stunt. DeSantis, we know, hates outlandish stunts. He's not a fan of them. He claims it has nothing to do with the new laws. I will remind you, he just signed this week into law a new version of his program where he spends millions and millions of Floridians' dollars to take migrants from like Texas and ship them to Wisconsin. So again, shut up about the stunts. Anyway, he says they're manufacturing the Roberto Clemente thing to create a narrative. Again, this entire thing, the entire Stop Woke Act, the entire thing of banning the books is to create a narrative. So how dare they get in on the fun, I suppose. So anyway, Anna, he's on the defensive. I think this is the first of many instances of this. They're gonna take all sorts of books out and people are rightly going to be freaked out about it.
Oh, Ronnie.
Meatball.
Every once in a while, you run into a brick wall when you don't really understand your own constituents. Mm-hmm. We're talking about Florida. We're talking about an autobiography by a star baseball player, a legend, okay? I'm very familiar with the Latino community in Miami in particular, okay? Cubans,
you've done
Puerto
in-depth
Ricans,
research.
Yes, and they love baseball. I mean, it is part of their culture. My husband, who's Cuban, was a professional baseball player. It is a huge part of their lives. So when books like that start to get banned and burned, all of a sudden it awakens people to how insane this form of censorship is. And hopefully they understand it's insane when it comes to books written by black authors, books written by members of the LGBTQ community. Okay, censorship destroys education. And I think that's also part of the objective for these conservatives. You know, it's much easier to control an ignorant public that doesn't have the education necessary to actually fight back against tyranny, fight back against authoritarian regimes. So, I love the fact that he's now trying to find a scapegoat for what happened when the fish rots from the head down.
Yeah, it rots from the meatball down. Anyway, yeah. First of all, I don't accept that this is a purposeful stunt or whatever. I think they flagged literally everything that references racism, gender identity, basically any interesting or controversial topic, and they're getting rid of it because they're worried about being fired because that's what the law is. But even if they did, good. I want the librarians of Florida to use whatever tools they have, and these are apparently the tools they have, to point out how ridiculous this is. As Anna said, when you open the door to this fascist control of literature and education, People need to know about it. They need to understand how serious this is. Apparently 1.6 million titles are under review because of this. And it's, that sounds bad, but bear in mind that school teachers and librarians had nothing but time leading up to this. They had just so much free time. Why shouldn't they review literally millions of books to make sure that they won't hurt anyone's opinion or anyone's feelings who hasn't even read them and never would? I'll also remind you, by the way,
Sorry about that, John. I just wanted to say, it is kind of interesting because a theory or a prediction I have is that all of this government attention on banning books might make reading cool. You know, it might.
I hope
make,
so.
Yeah, because I mean, nothing makes something cooler than the government trying to ban it. So we'll see.
Yeah, no, if this leads to just endless Gen Z TikToks of books that they're in the process of reading, I would love it. But no, I think I tweeted like a week ago, can Gen Z please bring back bookstores? Cause you know, they bring back retro stuff, wired headphones and you know, pocket cameras and everything. Bring back the bookstore so I can get out of this news thing and just open up a cafe combined with a bookstore.
Anyway. John, what if you and I start doing like dramatic readings of some of the books that have been banned in Florida?
That's not a bad idea.
That could be fun.
I actually do dramatic readings already, but they're of the ridiculous fantasy stories that I write. I do them on my Patreon every month.
Doesn't matter. I mean, you have practice, so that's good.
You know what I could do? I could start putting more sexual content into my stories so they get banned, and then peanut butter and chocolate. Anyway, but I do like that idea. There should be dramatic excerpts read on TikTok. Anyway, and also as he's protesting, by the way. I wanna read one more thing. Where is it? So DeSantis is saying blah, 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 we're not doing this. And then this guy, Manny Diaz, Florida's commissioner of education, he says, Florida does not ban books. What the hell are you talking about? Do you know what your job is? Do you know what state you're in? Do you know who you work for? They very much do. And as if to just put the cherry on the sundae of that, we don't ban books. Marjorie Greene and George Santos are co-sponsoring a bill to seek a federal ban of certain books from schools.
Oh my God.
Dave Rubin, rich people, don't burn this book. Okay, with that said, we're gonna move on to other news. Pretty much every day we get some sort of devastating update on the situation in East Palestine following the derailment of a train less than 2 weeks ago. The most recent news is that there was reason to be concerned, not in general about trains, from all that we've learned about the antiquated braking technology and the lack of regulations. There was reason to be concerned about this particular train because apparently excess size caused it to break down in the days leading up to its derailment in Ohio. So it originated in Madison, Illinois on the evening of February 1st, broke down at least once before it derailed in East Palestine, according to employees familiar with the matter. Employees say there were already concerns among those working on the train over what they believed was its excessive length and weight. 151 cars, 9,300 feet long, 18,000 tons. And that was before it actually reached East Palestine. Interestingly, Sarah Feinberg, who served as administrator of the Federal Railroad Administration from 2015 to 2017, said that the train was considered to be very long. When she was in that position, she wasn't happy with the lengths of trains then, and they were generally 80 to 90 cars long. This train was 50% longer than the ones she was already concerned about. So they're just, Anna, they're like, I know you've been covering this story now. There is so many concerns, so many signs that could have been read and you know, action could have been taken that stopped this from happening.
Last year, Norfolk Southern, which is the rail company operating this train that was derailed in Ohio, announced a $10 billion stock buyback program to enrich their shareholders. It's really important for folks to understand that the lack of safety protocols, the lack of employees necessary to ensure that safety inspections are being done regularly and properly, that is not an accident. That is very much intentional in order to cut costs, increase profits, and provide a return on investment to shareholders. This is how capitalism works. This is how the markets work. And the only way, if you're not a believer in nationalizing things or having workers own the means of production, if that makes you uncomfortable, in the very least, you need a government that is not captured by legalized bribery to regulate industry. And they are not doing that. Pete Buttigieg, the head of the Transportation Department, is making a conscious decision to avoid regulating the rail industry. There's a lot he can do unilaterally, and he's deciding to not implement those policies. That is the reality of the situation.
You are 100% right. Yeah. And I love their, I know you're going to be talking later on in the Young Turks today about his attempt to be like, what? I can't do anything. And it turns out that is very much not true. And I love the information you found that's revealed how much of a lie his attempted defense is. By the way, I want to give credit as well to CK Progressive, who sent in a super chat, says Norfolk Southern had another train derailment this morning in Michigan. No hazmat chemical spills this time, so the national media will ignore it. We will see. I think you're probably right. And I looked it up. Yes, apparently in Van Buren Township, a train operated by Norfolk Southern did derail, no hazmat leaks. So that's at least the good news, I guess. But no, seriously, there needs to be more. I think one good thing coming out of this is that we're learning about how common these derailments are. And so obviously this is a time when you need the government to get involved.
Yeah. And by the way, the government has gotten involved in one way, which was to prevent the rail workers who are overworked and can't take time off without being retaliated against. They intervened to prevent them from striking.
Yeah.
So when the government, you know, wants to get active, they do. But usually it's on behalf of the employers, as they did with the impending strike that they crushed.
Yeah. Okay. I also wanted to mention, by the way, and this is hopefully to give a sign of that, I hope that the media and politics are in for the long haul on this to get answers, because eventually if they move away, people are still gonna be dealing with this. Senators in both parties have called for congressional probes into the train derailment. So that's good. You might have some Democrats who are willing to talk about new regulations, more obligation on the corporations to make good when these derailments happen. And then you have some Republicans who feel freed up to pretend to care about what corporations are doing because this happened while Biden is president. So I'll take it if that gets both of them on the right page. Anyway, with that said, we're gonna move to our second break. We come back, we got some more fun and interesting news to get to, so don't go anywhere. Okay, more news and more Charlie coming up after this. Anyway, if you're wondering, should I watch live? You should, because during the break, sometimes Anna's dog appears. Not even when Anna's on the show. Sometimes we just, husband Skypes in, shows off the dog, disconnects. It's great for everyone. Okay, with that said, we're gonna move on to other news. Let's jump into this. You remember last year when the Republican Party was like full steam ahead attacking the Biden administration because of the supply chain issue? And in particular, they focused on one thing, how difficult it was for some parents to get access to formula. And it was true in a lot of areas of the country, it was difficult to get formula, to get as much as you needed, or the price could be highly elevated. Now, it was sort of a natural consequence of the supply chain issues we were having following a terrible pandemic that was made far worse by the fact that Republicans didn't care at all about what was going on. But regardless, there was some content to it and they made good on it with tweets like this, photos of there being some, you know, formula at a US border facility, whereas in a store there isn't. This is what America looks like, and they love that stuff. They love the idea that like a migrant is getting formula, but some like pure good blonde white kid isn't. So they'd send stuff like baby formula should go to Americans before illegals. This should not have to be sadder. Marjorie Greene talking about how in California you can steal formula, which I didn't know was a policy, but apparently it was. And how now others can't. And they're, according to her, the Biden administration sending pallets of baby formula to the border for illegal aliens while American mothers are crying in the grocery stores searching for it. So the supply chain issue was serious. They're using it to advance xenophobia, nonsensical. The issue is they appear to have forgotten about this entire thing because they're right back to not caring at all about whether good, blonde, milky skinned Americans are able to get formula. Because according to a new report, the cuts that they're proposing for people in the WIC program could result in as many as 1 million babies not getting access to the formula that they need. That's in addition, by the way, to things like fresh fruits and vegetables, other necessary foods. There's a lot of issues, but for some, formula is a big part of that. And up to a million or more could lose access to it based on the cuts that the Republicans are proposing. And I want to give at least a little bit of credit to some politicians, including Marjorie Greene, for her consistency on this. I don't mean that she's been consistently in favor of them getting access to formula. I mean that she also voted to cut the amount of formula that they could get last year. So it's just amazing how they'll use this to demonize migrants at the border and then immediately turn around and say, you poors think you should get formula, and just spit on them. And then all the while pretend, Anna, that they're the populists that are representing the forgotten conservative majority or whatever.
I mean, that's exactly right. They're not populists. Whenever they pretend to give a damn about what corporations are up to, and when they try to pretend like they're holding them accountable, typically it's over some vague message that they put out, obviously crafted by a PR agent that talks about the importance of diversity, but they don't actually mean it, right? Like, it's that kind of stuff that for some reason riles up Republican lawmakers, rather than the fact that these corporations, in some cases, like with the baby formula situation, have monopolized. This country is ruled by corporate greed, which they provide cover for. That's the reality of the situation, right? Someone like Marjorie Greene, who just yesterday went after Representative Ilhan Omar for calling out the corporate greed associated with the rail companies and how that has led to all these derailments. Marjorie Greene's like, she's blaming it on corporate greed. It's really about the fact that we don't have safety protocols and workers are lazy and there's a labor shortage. I mean, yeah, the rail companies fired so many workers that they went from a million at the peak to less than 200,000, which is obviously not enough workers to ensure that everything's safe. Like, she protects, Marjorie Greene protects corporate greed on a daily basis. She is a goon for corporate executives, period.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it's convenient to occasionally mention somebody like this, but only, again, for the aspect of it that advances their culture war. And then it's immediately forgotten. The needs of people are immediately forgotten. Really fast, here are some of the programs that could be affected by these cuts that they're proposing. It's a $472 million cut from the Home Energy Assistance Program, $950 million cut from the Child Care and Development Block Grant, $582 million cut from HHS programs tackling the opioid crisis. So the money you need to heat your home, that you don't die in the winter, which happens frequently in all parts of the country, but Texas, it's very trendy there for that to happen. Child care, opioids.
Like, I mean,
again, I don't want to focus just on Marjorie Greene, but she loves talking about like fentanyl constantly. Like, people die every day in the opioid crisis. They keep pretending that they want to do something about it, and then they cut huge chunks of the funding away.
They use the most vulnerable people as pawns, as political props, as convenient tools that they'll dispose of once they become inconvenient. And that's what someone like Marjorie Greene does on a regular basis. She purports to care so much about the record number of overdose deaths we experience in this country year after year after year. But when it comes to funding programs that these people desperately need in order to rehabilitate themselves, in order to deal with their addiction and actually be able to survive and thrive in this country, she wants to cut the funding for that, right? Because these people don't actually matter to her. The only use that she has for them or sees for them is for her own political aspirations. And you're right, it's not just about Marjorie Greene. This happens with almost every Republican politician. Okay, when it comes to mass shootings, they pretend to care so much about mental illness in this country, untreated mental illness. We need to do something about that. But once there's a bill right in front of them that they can vote yes on that would provide the necessary resources to actually treat people with mental illness, they'll vote no every single time.
Yeah, and again, as we point out a lot, also in a slightly different form, a lot of the Democrats too. You know, in the wake of the mass shootings, the Democrats also both pretend to care and I think do care a little bit more. And they'll actually talk about what's actually causing it, which is the guns. But then, you know, they don't actually get rid of any of them or anything like that. Like, they might be a little bit more willing to identify the actual problem. That doesn't mean that they actually solve the problem. They say the right things about the minimum wage and then it doesn't actually get raised. So is that better? In some ways, but not really. Anyway, we have one more topic to get to, and this hour is flying by. Time spent on a show with Anna Kasparian always seems to end all too soon. So why don't we get to this? By the way, this has to do with the ongoing right-wing war against the trans community. And there are some shockingly grotesque questions that are going to be asked in this. So spare in mind for the purposes of potentially being triggered as we launch into this.
You said that you're a trans woman.
I trans female. Yes, ma'am, sir.
Do you have a penis?
That's horrible.
Yeah. You're the one that brought that into the discussion.
Kind of doubt that she did. I feel like that was you. I feel like that was Arkansas Republican Matt McKee that brought that into the discussion. That should be it. That should be the end of your career. Your services should no longer be needed. But no, that's probably just the beginning of a long, successful career as a right-wing politician asking questions like that. By the way, Gwendolyn Herzig, who responded to that, and we're going to get to more of what she had to say, is a trans medical professor, a person with knowledge, with expertise, with perspective that could educate some of these incredibly ignorant, hateful people. But of course, as with most forms of education, they have walled themselves off to it. In any event, here is the response from Gwendolyn.
I never said anything about genitalia.
Oh, it has everything to do with genitalia.
I don't know what my rights are right now. I'm a healthcare professional, a doctor. Please treat me as such. Next question, please.
Senator McKee, that you asked my friend if she had a penis. And I would just like to tell you that even if you have a penis, it doesn't mean that you have honor or that you're a man.
I love that response too. Anna, what do you make of this?
Thank God for that response, because I was just so incredibly disgusted and didn't feel like I could possibly feel even more terrible about what I had just seen. And then that woman came in and saved us. So thank you for that. That was a great response. I just can't get over how difficult it is for some people in this country, typically people in positions of power, to treat others with dignity and respect.
Yep.
That's it. It's that simple. Dignity and respect. And he intentionally asked that question to degrade her. That's what that was about. Because that line of questioning really has no value in the context of what they're discussing. It's just meant to degrade her. That's it.
Yeah. I really wish, like, ideally, my greatest wish would be that we now lived in the world that I stupidly, naively imagined as a child watching Star Trek that we would someday be, that people actually had curiosity and empathy. We're not in that world. But I would at least wish that social pressure could get us a little bit more of the way there. Why does he feel comfortable doing that? Like, he presumably has friends, colleagues, maybe a wife, sisters. Why is there no pushback? You know, this is going to seem weird, but it gets again into the same general topic, which is that right wingers love obsessing about other people's lives, especially their sex lives. I think it was Matt Walsh did a bunch of segments attacking asexual people. He's married. Why doesn't that lead to an incredibly uncomfortable conversation about what the hell do you care about whether random people you've never met don't experience sexual attraction or feelings? Like, why is it that you can be an incredible weirdo and not suffer any social consequences for it?
Can I ask you a question? I mean, I did not see his content about asexual people.
I think the Surfs was tweeting about it.
What exactly concerns him about that? Like, what impact does he claim this has on his life or society as a whole? Like,
I don't know.
Life is so hectic.
Deeply weird.
Life is so hectic, so busy, so intense some days that like the idea that I would mull around about asexual people, I don't care like at all, not even a little bit.
I don't understand it. in any event, Matt McKee, absolute garbage. If today was Friday, probably would have been my garbage person, and great responses by Gwendolyn Herzig as well as her friend in that video. That is unfortunately all the time we have for the first hour of our show. Thank you to all of you listening on the podcast, watching on the linear platforms, much appreciated. If you are watching live though, lots more to come in the aftermath. Anna's gonna join me, so don't go anywhere.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.